Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the weekend of February 9th and 10th. Or the 10th is not a weekend day, but anyway, you know what I mean. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Thursday evening is Jim Allen. I guess it's not even early. I'm just totally out of whack here. What's going on? How you doing?
Oh, it's doing well. I'm in Studio B tonight in beautiful downtown Koenji.
Excellent, excellent. My off-season training has been fantastic. What a great program I'm on. What about you?
Well, actually, I've been good. I mean, I'm studying and spending a lot more time doing a lot of things that have kind of been kind of Gibson stuff, you know, looking at players and like going, oh, I don't like his footwork, you know, and oh, his swings doesn't look balanced, you know, all that kind of scouty kind of talk.
Scouty.
I'm kind of learning that.
Eye testy. Yeah. Not just number stuff. Excellent. I like hearing that. That's awesome.
Having said that.
You can't wait back to crunch some numbers somewhere, huh?
No, actually, well, the other half of the class is the course is actually called General Managers in Scouting, although because I was more interested in the scouting side, I think my window of development in the pro baseball business is probably going to preclude my becoming a general manager, unless it's of my rotisserie baseball team.
Okay, well.
So I think of it more of the scouting and the general manager course. But anyway, so the GM side has a lot of analytics. I mean, for example, today we were supposed to, this week's homework, we're supposed to identify an undervalued player, which is easy in MLB because every player before arbitration is undervalued.
Okay.
But anyway, things like that and looking at spreadsheets and stuff, I do a little bit of that too.
Good. All right. Well, here's what happens when we stay away for 3 weeks and we record a show early before the weekend that we release it. So we end up with a Hall of Famer passing away. We get players who start arriving from overseas. We get camps opening and we get practice games that are about to start. So meanwhile, you know, you got a hectic schedule and things are hectic as well as the Gibson household. But yeah, good to be back here with everyone. Thank you for listening. So on this week's show, we've got a talk with former Yomiuri star Warren Cromartie and former Hanshin and Yomiuri hurler Daryl May. And then we're going to hit some notes from camp. We're going to talk about the passing of Morimichi Takagi, the former Dragon skipper and player. And we've got some high heat, so let's start swinging. All right, so we got two interviews for you today. I will go first. I will lead off. I talked to Daryl May, who pitched with the Tigers in 1998 and 1999, then moved to the Giants for two seasons, won a championship with them in 2000. His best season win-wise was 2001, but he helped the Giants to that championship in his first season. He is living in Austin, Texas, and he works with a player rep agency, and he also coaches high school baseball at the moment. So, a quick thing, just during the chat, you'll hear him talk about the fact that he thought that the bridge was burned between himself and MPB when he left the Tigers, but he got an offer from the Giants. And I did ask him about the bridge burning part after the interview. And what he said was it was a long explanation, and it was best to say that both parties decided for a mutual split. So that's keeping it short. I know Jim was heavy into what was going on at the time, but let's just take a listen to what Daryl had to say, and then we'll talk about it afterward. All right, our guest this week is Daryl May, former Hanshin Tigers and Yomiuri Giants pitcher. Thank you very much for taking some time out to join us and talk about your days back here in MPV.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
All right, so how would you describe your time with the Tigers and their rabid fan base?
Well, first of all, I had no idea what I was in store for when I came to Japan, and how big baseball was in Japan. I mean, you know, you hear about it, you hear that the fans are great, but that did nothing, no justice for it compared to when I actually got there. I remember, you know, the first time when I went to Japan, and the scout / interpreter that brought me over was, you know, kind of preparing for me on the flight. He's like, okay, when we get off the plane, there's going to be some media there. We'll do a little press conference, and then we'll, you know, go to your hotel and whatnot, and get off the plane. And there were so many cameras and reporters there. I was turning around looking to see who was getting off the plane that was famous. it was overwhelming, to be honest with you. And you know, as I soon learned, you know, Tiger fans are very passionate fans and passionate about baseball and their team in general.
Oh yes. I mean, what makes that tough? That passion. It's. I'm sure it's really good when things are going well, but it can be tough. What makes it so tough when they're so passionate?
You know, I mean, obviously they want to see their team win. You know, at the time I was there with the Tigers, they were struggling a bit. So, you know, I'm sure there was frustration like there is in it rooting for any team. You know, you go through the lows and the highs with them, and sure, you go through some of the frustration with them. But I got to say, even though they were in a bad, you know, and not in the best place, when I came over there, even on bad days, you know, the fans were still super nice and super gracious. And, you know, not like, you know, playing for Boston Red Sox or, you know, the Chicago team where, you know, you get booed or you know, if somebody sees you out, they're like, ah, why couldn't you have done better? You know, the Japanese people were still very, very nice and gracious.
Yeah, that is the one good thing. So you come over as a pitcher, and I think when you came over, it seemed to me that pitchers were starting to get more opportunities in NPB, foreign pitchers, that is. And, you know, because it seemed like most of the time, most teams just were looking for a home run hitter. So when you came over, what did those teams lay out for you in terms of expectations when you joined the team?
Well, that's interesting. What they didn't lay out for me was that there was already three other pitchers over there, and that you're only allowed two pitchers on the big league, you know, team at once. So that I didn't know. So when I got there, I, you know, went to the minor leagues, and, you know, they got me acclimated to being there before they brought me up for my first game. And they had in mind, you know, me and another pitcher, Doug Creek, to switch us out every 2 to 3 starts. And
okay.
So I would get 2 or 3 starts on the big league team, and then he would get 2 or 3 big league starts and while I was in the minor leagues. You know, they didn't tell me any of this when I got there. You know, so that was a bit frustrating. It was, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, fortunately for me, I started off really well. I think early on, one of my first starts was against the Giants, and I did well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept me up there a little more. And then I think Doug, if I remember correctly, Doug had an unfortunate injury. So, it prolonged him coming back, and, you know, they kept me up there. And, you know, we had Ben Rivera on our team, who was our closer, who just did a phenomenal job. And,
I remember,
you know, so
Ben.
They weren't going to flip-flop him. He was doing too good.
Right.
So, you know, that part was a little bit of a struggle. You know, and just getting used to Japanese baseball in general, you know, baseball's baseball. It's bases are still 90 feet apart, 60 feet, 6 inches from the mound to home plate. But just the style of play, the quickness of the base runners took me a little while getting used to. You know, everybody got on base was fast and had the potential of stealing on you. So you had to really be careful.
Right.
And, you know, being a left-handed pitcher, my normal move to first base, I'd get called for a balk early on quite often. And so I had to learn how to adapt to that.
Right.
And, you know, so there was just some minor things that were slightly different. But, you know, in the end, you know, you still have to throw strikes, and you still have to hit a round ball with a round bat square.
Yep. So you made then a challenging move to the Giants as a free agent. So what was that whole transition like?
Well, that was crazy. I had no intention really of, after my 2 years there, of coming back over. I thought, you know, I kind of was done, burned that bridge with the Tigers. But, you know, I think the Giants, like I said, early on when I was with the Tigers, I pitched well against the Giants. And I think throughout my 2 years there with the Giants, I continued to pitch well against with the Tigers, I continued to pitch well against the Giants. And they saw that and, you know, saw an opportunity to get me to come play for them. And they convinced me to come back, and, you know, what I thought was going to be 1 year ended up turning into 2 years. We had a really good year, my first year with the Giants, and, you know, being in Tokyo. You know, Tokyo's a fun city. It was a great place to be.
Right.
Really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the team, you know, manager, teammates. It was a great situation, and, you know, of course, when you're winning, everything's good, and we were winning with the Giants. Had a really good team, so, you know, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we see a lot of guys come over, whether they're Japanese or foreign, as free agents and join the Giants, and after that, they don't seem to do well. But how do you evaluate your results with Yomiuri?
Evaluate my results with Yomiuri, you know, simply we had a good, really good hitting team. I mean, gosh. When you had a bad game, they stepped up and really helped you out. And then, you know, knowing that you had a offense like that behind you made it much easier to go out there and pitch and be comfortable and relax. You know, and I think, too, you know, being in Kobe, where you have the all-dirt infield, it's an outdoor stadium, natural grass in the outfield, you know, that was quite an adjustment. You know, the mounds weren't made of the hard clay that they are here in the States. So getting used to pitching on them, to where when you go into, you know, Tokyo and the Big Egg, that was a nice, harder, compact mound. It was turf, you know, grass, or, you know, fake grass infield.
Correct.
It was more of what you were used to, even though, you know, the stadium was not so big. I don't know, it just felt more comfortable is the best way I can describe it.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, down there in Nishinomiya, it's pretty different, I think, when you first see that stadium and then some of the other stadiums. So, now, who was a Japanese teammate who left a really deep impression on you while you were here?
Oh, my gosh. That's interesting to say. Japanese teammate in with the Tigers or just in general?
Any teammate, so Tigers or Giants.
Yeah, you got me thinking now, because there were several. You know, that did well. I mean, obviously, you know, Uehara was he was special just because the guy always had a smile on his face and was always so upbeat and positive. And I just like the way he went about. I mean, obviously, he was super successful right from the start, and that helped. But he was, you know, even if he saw you weren't having a great day, or, you know, things weren't going the way that you wanted to, he was just so upbeat and positive and smiling, and it never stopped him. He was never afraid to come up and talk to you you know, just make you laugh, make you smile. So that, he always stuck out to me, just because I just liked his way and the way he went about his business.
Yeah, he's definitely a fun guy. I follow him on Twitter, and he's perfect in that he's not too active. You know, the guys who are overactive, he's not too active. And when he says something, it's kind of profound. So it's he's a good follow. So that's interesting.
Right.
Do you keep in touch with any of your teammates?
Via social media, a few here and there, you know, from the Tigers, follow Yabu and who else do I follow from the Tigers? I don't know if I, Shinjo, I think. And then, you know, every once in a while we'll reach out, and, you know, they'll try their English on me and, send a message here and there. But, you know, and I follow a few of the Giants guys, but and I follow, you know, the Giants and Tigers in general, just on Instagram or Facebook, just to, you know, see how things are going and keep up with them. But you know, Matsui was another one. I was super impressed with how we handled all the pressure, because there was a ton of pressure on that guy. You know, he came up in a situation. It was expected, you know, to him to get the job done, and he did, you know, 9 times out of 10, it seemed like.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I remember him having a successful career as well. And yeah, I was interested because we've talked to some players throughout their, you know, I follow some guys, but I've talked to a few in the off season who said they've stayed in touch with, you know, some of their Japanese teammates. So I always found that interesting because I thought, well, at the very least, these guys needed an interpreter to talk to each other if they really wanted to have that deep a conversation. So how did that work out with you guys?
Well, you know, there's a few times where I'd want to say something, and, you know, now in the age of technology, you talk about, you know, everything in the internet with, like, you know, apps like Google Translate or something like that. I can very easily translate a message and send it to somebody.
Gotcha.
You know, and whether they reply, try to reply in English or they reply in Japanese, I can have it translate it back. So, you know, those type of things definitely help in this day and age.
Okay. So let me get you out of here on this one. I know you said you're doing some coaching now. So how do you like that aspect of baseball?
You know, it's fun. It's interesting because I coach at a private school here in the States, and typically, you know, private schools are smaller schools. So you know, the number of kids that come out to play baseball or the, you know, the experience that they have is usually less. So you don't have a big public high school to, you know, where you might have 60, 70 kids coming out for one team where, you know, some years we're struggling to field a JV team and a varsity team. So that part's challenging, but I enjoy coaching. I enjoy being able to give back and you know, teach kids and see kids grow. And, you know, been fortunate enough to send a few kids off to college to play, and actually had a few guys that I've coached early on make it to the minor league level. So that's been fun to see.
Awesome. Well, that's got to be fulfilling and rewarding, and obviously, that's a better feeling than winning a championship in some respects, because you put in a lot of work with those kids as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and it's fun because, you know, they know that you've had the experience to get to that level. So, you know, they work really hard and you know, it's fun to help them grow in that aspect and see that they can be that good.
All right, Daryl. You know, all right. Well, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to chat with us, and hope to see you again here soon in Japan. If you have a chance to come out, let us know that you're coming.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm actually I was in touch with one of the Giant scouts about that, you know, being able to see if I could get access to come to a game or something if we came over, because I really want to bring my family over. And we were actually thinking about it in 2020, but then we're like, oh my gosh, with the Olympics, it's going to be an absolute crazy place to be. But I think in the next couple of years, it's definitely going to happen. We want to make that trip over and, you know, reminisce for myself and my wife and show my kids where I got to play over there.
Okay. All right. We look forward to seeing you.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Daryl. Thank you very much again. Really great talking to you. Now, when he was actually playing here, I was just basically covering the Dragons in Nagoya. So I didn't really get a chance to talk to him, although I did see him pitch a number of times. But there are a lot of little nuggets in there. What really stood out and stayed with you afterward?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, I remember seeing him. I don't remember ever talking with Daryl. What happened was, in my career, I didn't really start going to lots of games regularly until 2002. So I was going, but it was pretty sporadic.
Right.
Okay, so I pretty much missed him. I didn't have the access that was afforded to some of my coworkers at that time. I was doing a column, however, so I'd go every week to the ballpark, you know, and talk to somebody about something. Mm-hmm. But anyway, a couple of things I love, I guess, a couple of great things, you know, about things you heard about Japan didn't do justice to the reality.
Mm.
I think that's always going to be true, you know, regardless of how much people tell you what to prepare for.
Sure.
You know, as guys say, until you've actually done it, until you've actually been, you know, I'll just take the observation of a former Tigers pitcher. until you've been in the bullpen on the first day of camp and had heard the catcher going jaw to jaw with the umpire over the strikes and balls he was calling in the bullpen.
In camp, yep.
You haven't really experienced Japanese baseball.
Yes.
Thanks, thanks, Jeff Williams, for that little anecdote. So the other one was, I didn't know, you know, I got here and I expected to be, you know, they're going to use me, but I didn't know there were three other pitchers who basically, there were other three other pitchers on the roster.
Right.
That's from 1994. You were allowed to have three players on the active roster.
Okay.
And you were
any combination.
1994.
Any combination? And,
yeah.
Oh, you had to be two pitchers, right?
You had to have one at least one of each.
Okay.
So you couldn't have three fielders and you couldn't have three pitchers.
Gotcha.
And then in 1994 and 1995, you were still only allowed to have three foreign players on the roster.
Okay. On the top team roster.
And you could only have three active. And then during May's time, it was unlimited number of players on the in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
But only four on the first team, of which two had to be pitchers and two had to be non-pitchers.
Right. A maximum of two each.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, and that was, and then when the day he left for the final time, then they changed it. They said, "Okay, May's gone. We can change the rules." And that was the current 2000 from 2002. It has been four players, and they can't all be pitchers, and they can't all be position players.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yep. So anyway, so when he was he came and okay, there's three other pitchers. So he didn't tell you this. And that's, to me, that's Japanese baseball in a nutshell.
Right.
We're not gonna you know, it's funny because they want to tell you everything else. They want to tell you how good their baseball is, and they want to tell you all the things that they want you to do, but they so rarely tell people what they're actually expected to do. You know,
that's why.
Or the roles.
Yeah,
the roles, sort of like, oh, well, that's for us to know and for you to find out. And I was having this same discussion with Bobby Scales the other day, and we were talking because he's still in touch with Micah Hoffpower. Mm-hmm. And Micah Hoffpower was one of the three guys who played in NPB who actually asked me if I knew when they were going to play.
Right, former Fighters player. Yeah, you know, I remember talking to you about this on the show a long time ago, is about defining the roles and making sure everybody knows what mm-hmm. they're supposed to be and how important that was. And I was thinking about that comment as well, and I wasn't sure if it was the Hanshin system, the Hanshin way, or just the way of a lot of teams that would do it, because I just don't see the Giants bringing in a player and not explaining and having a meeting about what he's supposed to do, the way they have like to have meetings anyway. So I thought it was kind of unique, maybe, to them.
Yeah, it is ironic that they have zillions of meetings, but we're actually not going to tell you things.
Well, like again, I'm not sure if that was a unique to Hanshin or maybe.
I think it's an old style thing.
I agree
and
there.
I think
yeah.
that and the Tigers are a little more old school than most teams.
And it was more than 20 years ago, so.
indeed. I think that was probably the norm then, and it's less so now. There's, you know, sort of the thing in Japan that people are, I don't know, kind of in tune with the fact that it's a new century.
Mm-hmm. Sort of into.
Okay, so that was that, and then I guess the other thing. So as soon as he said Ben Rivera, my one Ben Rivera anecdote was there was a rookie pitcher with the Tigers who won a game, and Ben, it was one of the first, one of Ben Rivera's, might have been his first save.
Okay,
and he closed out the game, and then he had the ball. The cat, I think he struck the guy out. He had the catcher threw the ball back to him. Mm-hmm. And he chucked it in the stands.
I think I remember that as well.
he chucked the winning ball into the stands. And then afterwards they told him, oh, don't do that. Speaking of things, nobody told him not to chuck the winning ball into the stands. They just figured he'd you'd know that one. So the other, and then the last bit is just about that part of the story was, about the backstory about why he burned bridges with the Tigers.
And that's Darryl himself.
He was
right?
That was the first year that Katsuya Nomura was managing the Tigers. The first of, he managed 99, 2000, 2001, and they finished fourth, last every year. But Nomura's he's a hard guy to get along with. He's a bit of a dictator. And Daryl May had a number of these kind of communication issues with, I think, cross-cultural communication issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because they seem to happen repeatedly. And I think they were more with the Tigers than the Giants. But it ended up in for example, I believe the story was a trip to the dentist and he told the team and they didn't manage it well, or he told his interpreter and they didn't manage it well, or he assumed it was okay and it wasn't, and he got suspended for going to the dentist.
Mm.
And then when he complained about it, he got suspended indefinitely.
Mm.
Okay, so that was the end of that with the Tigers, and he went, I think he left the Tigers in August or early September or something. And then so he was obviously surprised when he came back with the Giants, and he had some issues with the Giants too. He'd hit Hideki Matsui with a pitch,
mm-hmm.
and really annoyed Matsui, which is hard to imagine because Hideki Matsui is pretty unflappable.
Yeah, pretty calm guy. Pretty.
Yeah, pretty, yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to imagine anybody doing that. Anyway, so when Daryl May became a teammate of Matsui's, the first game he pitched against the Hanshin Tigers in 2000, Nomura, his old buddy, instructed all the Tigers hitters to jump out of the batter's box when he was getting set. And he knocked down the leadoff hitter, Yutaka Wada. And hijinks ensued.
Shenanigans and hijinks, yeah.
Indeed. So that was really, the thing about Daryl May was he was a really effective pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But he just never quite, the Tigers never really warmed up to, or Nomura never quite warmed up to him that they could get over the communication issues. And that was really, unfortunately, the story, because I think he could have had a much better time here in Japan. So anyway, it was really good to hear him, and I remember, getting off the plane and looking to see who got off the plane who was famous, because how many times have we heard that? I remember Gail Hopkins said the same thing. He got off the plane and says, like, what famous person's getting off this plane?
Oh, you took all my stuff, man. That's what I was going to talk about. Both items. I'm surprised you locked on to what I was going to talk about. But yeah, obviously the thing about not defining the role was a big thing for me, but then you hear him tell that little anecdote about getting off the plane and him turning around to see if there's somebody like Tom Cruise or somebody else on the plane who was actually famous behind him, and it's all for him. And when he started that story, I actually thought he was going to talk about them asking nutty questions, that he had just arrived in Japan and they're asking him how he liked Japan, because we've heard those pose those questions right when they land, and of course they have no impression of Japan. The airport's nice. What do you want me to say
here? Yeah, indeed, the plane was really good.
But I think that certainly gives guys an idea of what kind of media coverage they might encounter when they come here. So those were my points as well. It was really fun talking to him. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to talk to him at all when he was here and active, although I believe I saw him at the first year at Nagoya Dome, but I don't even recall that well, because my whole focus was just covering the Dragons anyway. I didn't really need to talk to the visiting players too much, and I never saw any of the shenanigans and the other things that went on. So, but it was really, really fun talking to him, and we appreciate him coming on. So now we're going to move to phase two and interview two with you and Warren Cromartie.
Okay, yeah, Warren Cromartie he's been coming to Japan a lot the last couple of years. I know a lot of people remember him from his time with the Yomiuri Giants as a player. And he was he came to mind the other day because I'm working on a story about Carter Stewart, and I was thinking, you know, how often is it that, you know, Japan just being the balance between Japan and the major leagues is so lopsided?
Mm-hmm.
And Warren Cromartie is really the major league player who had value in his prime earning years in the majors, was a wanted free agent who left MLB to sign in Japan. And he was it. He was it. And it wasn't because it was unsuccessful. It's just that was the one time when that happened. And it was, get this, it was because the Yomiuri Giants offered him twice as much as he was already to sign with the San Francisco Giants, and the Yomiuri Giants offered him double.
Wow.
You want to guess how much the Yomiuri Giants offered him a year? That was double the San Francisco Giants offer in 1984 for 1984?
$1 million. Yep.
His offer for the Giants was $520,000 as a free agent, as a 30-year-old veteran, everyday major league outfielder.
You hear that, Mookie Betts? Oh, he of the $400 million contract you want? You hear that? $1 million in 1984.
Yeah. So anyway, that was that. And he came and he had quite a career, and he said it was a huge shock and blah, 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 blah. And I'll spare Warren Cromartie saying blah, blah, blah. We share that expression a lot. And basically, the thing I love about this story is it's a dream come true. Oh, I went to the ballpark today and I got a job on the baseball team.
Yeah. Only one.
You know, he went to see friends. He went to the Tokyo Dome to watch the game and see friends, and he got a contract offer to be an advisor for the Giants.
Yeah. Nice.
I want that job.
I can do it.
Not necessarily for the Giants, but
I can do it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's listen to Warren Cromartie. All right, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is the other Mr. Giant, Warren Cromartie. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Great, great to hear your voice, Jeff. Great to hear your voice.
Yeah, it is good to be back with you after a whole 2 weeks. We so talked to you 2 weeks ago, and you're in Florida. You're in Florida, right?
Yes, I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, about 20 minutes away from where the Super Bowl was played yesterday, and great weather down here. Everybody had a great time.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay, well, then it's Miyazaki. Miyazaki in Okinawa. That's not too bad. That's all right. Although I haven't figured out why they start in Miyazaki where it's cold.
I don't get it either. I think there's obligations. Giants always got obligations.
Yeah,
there's corporations and cities, that type of thing. So.
Yeah. So okay, well you're arriving in Japan on February 20th. You are going to be going down to Okinawa.
Oh, I'm not sure yet. I got some speaking engagements to do in Japan because you know this is Black History Month around the world, and
right.
I have a few speaking gigs in Tokyo.
Oh, excellent!
During that time, I'm not sure about Okinawa. It could happen.
Okay, well, let's cross our fingers. Okinawa is a nice place to be, especially at the end of camp. So, okay, well, now last year, how many days do you reckon you were at the ballpark watching the game, the Giants games last year?
Well, when Harrison asked me to work with Christopher Villanueva, and later on he worked with Okamoto as well, then a couple other hitters, I was pretty much there every home game. I went on the road with them. I went to Nagoya with them, and Yokohama, pretty much at the home. So I made my presence known once Harrison wanted me to be there, so it was great to get back in semi uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you there, and I'd heard about it, but you know, Jason, my buddy Jason, told me you were around, and so in fact, the first time I said I was at Tokyo Dome, I said, "Yeah, I saw Crow," and he says, "Yeah." It's like I told you, I'm going in. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now tell me, now we talked a little bit of last time about how that came about. You wanna relay that to our podcast listeners?
Well, I was, in the last year's summer when I finally decided to go to the game. I wanted to go to the game, and I was in town and doing some other stuff, television stuff, and I decided to go to a Giant game and see Hara. I haven't seen Hara. Of course, that was his first year coming back as manager. And had all my friends as coaches. Miyamoto was there. Mizuno was there. Yoshimura was there. So I pretty much went there to say hello. And I called Hara because me and Hara really, we last 3 years before he came back the manager, I would come to town and me and Hara, we would get together. We'd go out to dinner and we'll talk and talk about the Giants, talk about baseball in general. So he's back at the helm again. So I decided to go see a game. I went on the field and saw him, and they were playing the Cart that night. And I really wanted to make sure I said hello to the second baseman there for the Hiroshima Cart. Kikuchi, the best second base I've seen in Japan. Anyway, we started talking around the cages. I was telling him my thoughts on Christian Villarreal at the time because I watched him on TV, and I knew he was having some problems. And most of the problems, a lot of hitters, a lot of players come over here, it's the mental adjustment. They find a difficult thing to adjust to right away. And I saw that right away in Christian. And, he was playing great defense. He had a good glove, pretty much solid third base there, but just couldn't catch on the hitting-wise. And Hara wanted me to work with him on the side, so I went down to the farm team, worked with him. Next thing you know, he got called up, and then I worked with Okamoto, who really took to what I was saying, and he really took off with it. So from there, I stayed with the team the rest of the year. June or July, I got a hold of him. He wasn't doing too well. He had about 220, something like that.
He's 23 right now. Mm-hmm. He was their first round draft choice out of high school in 2014, so... He played the first 3 years mostly on the farm, and then 2018, he had that breakthrough year, drove in 100. I think he was the first, I don't remember what he was the first of, but he hit 300, and he had 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, and he was, I think, the youngest Giant player ever to do that. Okay, so tell me about Okamoto, what he's got as a hitter, and what maybe some of the things that you talked about, he was in tune with what you were talking about. Now, what was that? What was it that you were able to be on the same wavelength and understand with him?
Well, when I first got a hold of Okamoto, he was hitting about 220 something. He was having a real difficult time.
Okay.
And of course, the kid had a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And Hara wanted me to work with him. And I remember my first day working with him down in the cage at the dome. Everybody showed up. Even the general manager, the president was watching from another angle, and Harold was down there. My whole thing, he heard it was a different voice, another voice that he's had probably never heard before in his life, teaching him how to get American, a foreign voice. And right away, I checked him out, what he was doing, and we corrected a couple of things with his balance and his approach. My whole thing, anybody teaching whether it's Japanese, American, whatever it is, Jim, it's all about being prepared. It's all about being focused and having a plan. And that's something that I really stressed with Okamoto for the first time. And I wanted him to, and I saw his power, I saw his potential. But as far as I'm concerned, all power hitters, right-handed, left-handed hitters, should show power to the opposite field. So right away, I got him thinking, I want him to start thinking center field straight away, right center field, and down the line, right field line. Down the right field line, right center, and straight away. I want him to focus and show some power that way. That way I want him to let him learn how to let the ball travel a little bit and have built his confidence that he can go yard, he can go home run any place in a ballpark. Any place in a ballpark is a true sign of a power hitter that can take you deep left center, straight away, right center, or down the line. And having a good plan to it, taking a pre-batting practice, what they do, all the hitting and the soft toss they do it before they take batting practice. We start with a plan, and I made sure that he understood that from day one. When he comes with me, we have a plan that we want to do. We started pre-batting practice, and what we do in pre-batting practice we take into batting practice. Mm-hmm. And from batting practice, we apply that in the game. See, batting practice, they call it BP, but I like batting preparation.
Okay.
You know, I like BP, batting preparation, and what you do before the game. It you focus and you gear up your game plan. Whatever you do in the batting cages, that's your game plan for the game. So it was a consistent, it was a different voice for him. Mm-hmm. As we got to know one another, he got to know me and I got to know him. We talk about every pitch. We'll talk about a particular game. I will make certain notes what I see during the course of the game. And he understood that I look for consistency. Mm-hmm. I look for every bat to be consistent, not to go up and give easy bats away. Take your walks when needed. Doesn't think because he's hitting fourth that he has to be the guy that does everything. Because most of the time he'll probably get up with nobody on base, or if he does, it'll be two outs or whatever. It's, you know, teaching patience and, you know, overall a plan. And I think he got it. He got it, and he stayed with it. And then during the course, he really showed what we were talking about. And of course, you know, they're talking about who's the guru who changed him around. The news and the media started talking some things, saying some good thing about myself and working with him. And, you know, and the Giants saw it. I got, you know, the general manager was pleased. The president was pleased. And Harrah. So it worked. He got confidence throughout the year. He just took off through the remaining year. He took off. He showed confidence. He really started to show confidence, taking balls straight away deep, right center field, no problem. And he focused on what we were talking about. So he bought into what I was selling him. So that's the main thing. You as a hitting coach, they have to buy in what you're teaching. And mind you, Jim, there's a lot of hitting. You know, everybody's a hitting coach, defensive coach, pitching coach.
Right.
I try to keep my own little circle there, talk with these kids, because they got a lot of people jamming in their ear. They got a lot of people. They got a lot of people who are in their ear.
Okay.
You know, so that was my whole thing with him, and he took off with it. And
excellent.
He wound up getting MVP of the playoffs.
Okay. Now, let me I want to talk about you for a second. Now, how was that experience for you? I mean, how did you enjoy working with this kid every day and seeing
the results? I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed it immensely. And, you know, we got to liking one another. He started to ask questions. I started to teach him a little English. Vocabulary, things of this nature. He's a big Cabrera, Miggy.
Okay.
He loves Miggy Cabrera. He likes that. And I can see that in him.
Mm-hmm.
But if he likes Miggy Cabrera, then he has to go all fields with power and not give bats away, make contact, put the ball in play, that type of thing, cut down the strikeouts. Trying to get him to understand what Major League means, because he wants to play in the majors.
Okay.
Wants to play in the major, and I hope to mentor him. My whole thing is mentoring him, getting him ready for the major. If that's the case that he wants to do, he's got a lot of work to do still. He made a step in the right direction last year, but he's got a lot to learn still. If he wants to play in the major, quicken up his bat a little bit, recognizing the ball a little bit earlier, that type of thing, putting the ball in play. So, you know, he's off to a good start. He looks like he's hungry, got a great footwork for a big guy. I liked him at first base. Giants got him at third base. Got a good club. He's got a real good arm. He plays, and he's smart. He's very smart.
Okay, now.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much.
Excellent.
I enjoyed working with the Giants back with the Giants again, being on the field, seeing some, you know, during that course of the time, I saw some players that I played against would come up around the cages, home and away, come up. We reminisce a little bit. Seeing some players I haven't seen in a while, and, you know, the fans, being up and close with the fans, I think it worked out for everyone.
You didn't get to lead any bonsai cheers, did you?
Yeah, I did. At the end of the
back. There. I remember that now.
Yeah, they got it on YouTube. I went out there, did my thing, and it was great having 40-some thousand people still call your name. And
oh, yeah.
That was a real thing like that. So.
Oh, well, good for you. Good for you. You earned that, man. Okay, now let me ask. It's been a while, you know, since you were playing. I mean, I remember, you know, the days when you were here and how the game was. It's changed a, you know, a little bit in different ways. You see a little bit more of this, a little bit less of that. What were some of your impressions about the game, if you can sum them up?
Well, my impression about the game, I think the Japanese baseball is, I would like to see a little bit more aggressiveness in the game. I like to see
in what way?
I don't see a lot of players stretching out singles into doubles.
Mm.
I don't see a lot of triples. I see a lot of you know, different hitters. I'm seeing a lot of strikeouts. I think overall the pitching game has stepped up a little bit.
Mm.
There's a lot better pitching.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot better pitching, the approach to the pitching. I think maybe the defense catching the balls a little better as well.
Mm.
The guys catching the ball. There's no shifts yet, thank God. Seeing those stupid shifts they do over here in the majors, they don't do it in Japan. So I just hope that never comes across.
Well, it's awfully hard to do it in Japan when 24 guys on the bench could hit it the opposite way when they want.
Yeah. So, you know, I think SoftBank really has the team in Japan. They got everything. They're very strong pitching, very strong defense. They have depth. They have a lot of good depth that I think a lot of teams don't have, and great leadership.
Well, so, let me ask another question, because you played with Tatsunori Hara for a while. You were teammates, and when he called on you when he needed you, did you think back to him as a player? Do you see anything in him as a manager now that you saw when he was a player? Because he shocked the hell out of me as how good he was as a manager. I did not see that coming.
Well, I see the confidence that he brings with the team.
Hmm.
I think the team realized who he is and what he's done. He's been a giant ever since, you know, before he was a giant. He's always a giant. And I think his respectability from his team players, which he had when he was playing for the Giants as well, I know I respected him a lot because I knew how the Giants thought of him. And I think that's what he brought to, you know, he's not a speedster.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a thinking man's type of player that he was. He was very meticulous as far as his hitting, and he understood the game. So I think that's what I see most out of him now.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining us again. This is your second time in 2 years, and much appreciated, man.
Well, Jim, I hope to see you. I'll see you in a couple of weeks or so. Well, maybe in March or when the Giants
starts
open
early this year. Wow.
Yeah, everything starts earlier this year. Even here in the majors, they start early. And eventually, they're going to cut down the games to maybe 145, I think, something like that. They want to start things. They don't want to run into football season, Major League Baseball, in the cold weather. Hey, so
I'll tell you, every spring training, I think, I wish spring training was about 3 months long and the season was a month long, and then my season would be much easier to manage.
I hear you, man. Jim, good talking to you, man. Okay, thanks for having me on your show.
Okay, Okay, thanks, buddy, and hopefully we'll see you on opening day at Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see you there. Now, you know, I have an Uncle Warren, and I love Warren's...
You can call Warren Uncle Warren.
I could, and people would believe me. And
they might.
And I love Warren Spahn, but that name seems to be one of those older names that kind of is fading away. Like Vernon. Mm-hmm. You don't meet a lot of guys named Vernon who are young anymore.
No, you don't, Vern.
It's a commercial from the 80s. But he does have some old-fashioned punch mixed in with his comments there and his attitude. And frankly, I love it. I mean, he's like, you know what? Get it done. You know, go out, work, do your preparation, and get it done. And I really like what he talks about in the work that he did with Kazuma Okamoto. He calls it BP, but he said it's batting preparation. And take, you know, there's pre-BP work, and then you take that into the batting practice, and then you take what you work on in the batting practice into the game. And, yeah, I don't hear a lot of that happening, or about a lot of that happening. I see, because you and I, we watch a lot of BP when we're out there trying to get these interviews, or just when we go to games, because we go so early. And I just, when I see guys and I see them again, they're just working on the same stuff. And I would think that you're working, you know, I saw it in the Japan series a long time ago. It was Kosuke Fukudome. And he was going to face a left-handed fighter's pitcher. And I think I just saw him in batting practice working on taking outside pitches down and hitting them to left field and trying to keep them fair. And I saw him working on that in batting practice. And then, of course, he never got a pitch like that in the game. But but at least, you know, I saw him working on it, and it looked obvious, like, that he was taking that prep work for that specific pitcher, starter, and he was going to take that into the game. And I see guys, a lot of times, you'll see them 1 week, and they're, you know, swinging one way, and, you know, they do their swings, and then they get into the batter's box, and then, you know, they just do the same thing. If they have a routine, some guys like to, you know, try to spread the ball around a little and then pull some balls and then hit some balls the other way. So I like that whole approach. And I like the things that he said about Okamoto being a power hitter. I didn't know that Okamoto wants to play in the major leagues. I had talked about his weight and his potential for not aging well last year on the show. And I think he's going to have to address that if he wants to be a major leaguer. But maybe not. I mean, Miguel Cabrera is the body type I would actually comp him with, except he doesn't have as big a frame. I think Cabrera is much bigger, but yeah, that's good. And I like what Warren said about him, a true power hitter being able to hit to all fields. And I think we saw a little bit of that from Okamoto, particularly in the second half of the season last year. So maybe that work that Warren was doing with him started to pay off. So those are the things that really stood out to me in the interview, but I just like the whole thing. Warren can, he can be excitable. And
crotchety is another word.
Crotchety is another word. But he is such a fun personality, such a fun guy to talk to, and I'm glad he was on. I'm glad we got to talk to him. Yeah, it'd been the first time in a long time.
You know, it's funny because he and I really haven't talked a lot. We've talked, to be honest, we've talked more in the last 2 weeks than we've talked in our entire lives. We spoke one time. He was in the press box one time at the Tokyo Dome, and he and Wayne Grassick, and I mean, this was a long time ago. I had one of those old clamshell MacBooks.
I remember those, the PowerBook.
So
it was a power book.
Yeah, so that was 15 years ago, maybe. And then we talked a couple times on, you know, we chatted, we sent messages, texts back and forth on Facebook now and then. And that was about it. And then he saw me at the ballpark, but he remembered me, which I found amazing because, like I said, we probably talked face-to-face once.
He remembered you. You must have said, "Who, me?" You turned around and thought he was talking about Daryl May.
Well, I think it was the Facebook. You know, he saw my picture on Facebook, and so he remembered me from that. But he's just so friendly. I mean, he's such a personable guy, and you know, and for all the, as I said, all the crotchety, you know, they're ruining my game with these shifts, you know, kind of stuff. He's still really into people and their good points, even though he can be, I don't know, a typical ball player, you know, and have, you know, have some zingers, which didn't make it onto the recording.
No, but I don't think FCC laws govern our podcast.
Try to keep a John does. John's got to rein me in. Look, he sent me the muzzle. It's here next to me as a reminder. So it was all fun, and I guess that whole bit, that attitude comes across, and he's really, you know, and when I sent John the interview to be, you know, for the final editing, I said, you know, it reminds me, he's a little bit kind of like a 1980 version of Tyrone Woods, which he's really honest about what he thinks. And he doesn't really care whether you think that's a good thing to say or not.
Yeah. Which is fine.
And you got to love that. And I do, because it's unvarnished. And it's, you know, and some of the people who I disagree most with, but I also love to talk to the most, are some of these Japanese guys who say, look, I got no use for this. I got no use for that. Or this is the way we have to do it because it's Japan and this is why we do it. Because they're telling you, you know, it's straight from their heart. And that's important. Even if they disagree with you, even if you like, you want to say, how can you say that nonsense? But you learn something when people speak the truth.
Yeah, or the truth as they see it.
Or their truth.
Yeah, the truth as they see it, and you exchange the ideas, and he's exactly. Perfectly willing to have a conversation with you. But
oh yeah, so it was just wonderful, and I appreciate him spending the time twice, because I'd interviewed him for another story 2 weeks before, and I thought, and I had neglected to get the podcast, and it was either get another interview or the muzzle.
Yep. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you to both gentlemen for taking the time out, and much appreciated. Hope to have them back on again. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the fact that camps have opened. Woohoo! So to speak.
That's right, kids.
And I do this every year, I purposefully try to give a verbal shot to Michael Westbay, because today had to be the coldest day of the year in Tokyo, without a doubt. In fact,
it was about -2 out now.
Yeah, the coldest day,
-2°C
in probably a year. And here we are talking about
30
spring
degrees
training.
Fahrenheit for you non-Celsius people.
Yeah, non-Celsius people. So yeah, 30, maybe 28 degrees.
30.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so by the time you guys listen to this, it will have been nearly 2 weeks of camp. And so I just wanted to touch on some of the highlights that I have seen. I've been trying to watch as many news programs, and you know me, once the kids go to sleep, I'm free to, you know, YouTube it and do all kinds of stuff. So some of the guys I've seen on the screen a lot, starting with Noki Sasaki of the Lotte Marines.
I haven't seen the Marines camp yet.
Oh yeah,
except in the news.
Yeah,
I haven't seen. They don't. I haven't watched any of their camp TV. So.
Yeah, and I suspect, you know, Michael Westbay likes to dislike the overpopular stuff. So there's always a media darling who emerges. Sometimes it's already pre-decided. I don't think they haven't made a decision on who it's going to be. In part because Sasaki, I think, you know, he had some elbow problems before he was even drafted. And an elbow issue, I should say. And
he had people talking about
right well
an elbow
he, because
issue.
Yeah, because he didn't make a start in at Koshien, so to protect his elbow, whatever.
Well, because his team didn't play in Koshien.
I'm sorry, before they didn't get a chance to go there. That's
he did not pitch on back-to-back days because his manager wanted to keep his arm from being damaged.
Not at Koshien, but to go to Koshien, he didn't pitch. So
correct.
So I think the media wants him to emerge, but the media has also been paying a lot of attention to Yasunobu Okugawa of the Yakult Swallows.
Yeah, who actually has an issue.
Who actually had some inflammation in his arm, in his pitching arm, and was started out
from
camp
from pre-camp workouts.
Is that what it was running? Yeah, so he started working out with the farm team. So
and apparently he just started throwing catch today.
It was today. Okay.
He'd been prohibited from throwing for the first 6 days of camp.
So it's going to
be 5 days.
Yeah, it's going to be those two guys. I think the media is going to declare their golden rookie, or the guys they're going to try to follow. But some other players have been getting some other rookies have been getting some spotlight. But I also saw Shintaro Fujinami of the Hanshin Tigers, and you know, same situations with him. He's kind of wild, and when he's not wild, he's not. His stuff in the strike zone isn't anything but straight. It's hard, but it's straight. But he's still just 25, and I think the Tigers just don't want to give up on him. And
He's been getting some screen time here in the preseason, and I think they're going to try to push him out there and try to get him. I mean, you know, obviously, Randy Messenger, having retired from the team, they need one arm to come out there, and they certainly would like him to emerge. He certainly has the velocity. They just have to get the other issues that he has had, but if they can correct some of those, then he'll be out there. I did see Coco Ballantyne, the new SoftBank Hawks DH, whom they added as a free agent this past offseason, and they're looking to him.
Well, he's going to be playing in the outfield a lot.
You think so? I'm not sure. I mean, remember when we talked to him?
It's going
to
be between him and Alfredo Despaigne.
Well, yeah. Well, I take the guy who's been a little bit healthier over the past three seasons, and I guess.
Okay. Well, between the two of them, actually, I mean, that's a tough decision. You got two guys who are, you know, really. Although, to be honest, to be fair to Alfredo Despaigne, his defense in the Japan series was, you know, it was slow, but it was
adequate.
Otherwise solid. Yeah. I mean, he didn't get to balls because he was slow, but when he got to him, he was fine. I mean, he didn't hurt him by being, you know, by being doing foolish stuff.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, SoftBank is hoping that they take turns getting injured, for sure. You know, when one guy's down, the other one's
I'm not certain that was the plan, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. That they won't, they'll, one of them will be available.
Plan, yep. Yeah, hopefully. I did notice that the Bay Stars have brought in shortstop legend Omar Vizquel as an infield coach, and he's been working with this rookie infielder, Keito Mori, and I don't know if he's going to be able to work himself onto the first team or get some time at short, but it looks like they want to maybe make that move and push him to play a little bit on the first team, maybe take over. I don't know. Yamato Maeda is really good. I don't know if he's going to defensively be the guy, and I don't know what he's going to do with the bat, but it's interesting.
I think he can hit a bit, but he's sort of that prototype left-handed, fast left-handed guy who is been taught all his life to hit the ball between third and short.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, he played center field for the national team in the under-18 World Cup.
Okay.
So I didn't get a chance to see him play short. I haven't had a chance to see him play at shortstop very much. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, Yamato Maeda was their first choice shortstop last year, and he's about 65 years old. So that's probably not a long-term solution.
I agree, and that's why I'm thinking, yeah, this might be a transition year. But I just think having Omar Vizquel in your camp as a defensive coach, giving your young infielders pointers, is just a fantastic move by the Bay Stars.
Oh, think? Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I love, you know.
And apparently, Alex Ramirez, remember, he was in the Cleveland organization long, long ago back in the day.
Yeah, they were teammates.
They were teammates, yeah. Yeah, so they know each other. So that's.
And they're from Venezuela,
Venezuela, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, you know, that's a good thing, because I'll tell you, some of the huge things that have happened in Japanese baseball have been because of that cross-cultural interaction in spring training. And it used to be that the Japanese teams went to them. A couple of teams went to the U.S. every year, like the Fighters did last year.
Right.
But they used to go a little later. You know, they used to go when the major league teams were in camp, and they'd play major league teams in preseason games.
That's right, yeah.
And, I remember that. I mean, this really ended. The Fighters went, it's really the first time since the first Gulf War that this has been a big thing. I take that back, the second Gulf War, the invasion of Iraq. But the Giants used to go to Guam, which is not quite the same thing. The Kintetsu Buffaloes used to do that. But a lot of the teams used to go to the States. And my point is, they used to meet these coaches. And some of these coaches had huge impacts. And I'm going to say, one of the guys who had a huge impact on Japanese baseball was Warren Spahn. People don't think about it, but he came and he coached the Hiroshima Carp. And Yoshiro Sotokoba was the Sawamura Award winner in 1975 when the Carp won the Japan Series. And he was like a pet project, although his career was sort of towards the end, but he was a pet project of Warren Spahn, and they were really tight. And Soto Koba said he had a huge influence on him. And they met Joe Lutz, who was the manager, and Warren Spahn because the Carp went and used the Cleveland Indians spring training facility for a couple of years before that.
Gotcha.
You know, that was back in the day, and they had this interaction, and they made these connections. And teams, the Yomiuri Giants famously used to work out at Dodger Town in Vero Beach, Florida. And they made these connections, and they learned these things, and it was a huge influence. And unfortunately, that's something that doesn't happen anymore, and I don't know if it's the cost or what, but they just don't do it. But it's a huge loss. And so bringing Omar Vizquel is a huge, I don't know, it's a huge thing, but it's a really smart move.
Yeah, I like
in
it.
In my opinion.
I like it. You know, the Lions opening up their camp without Shogo Akiyama, but I think what I have seen is a lot of Shuta Tonosaki, and he's gaining more respect. And I've been calling him a terrific player for the past couple seasons. Well, he got an interview the other day, in which Tomonori Maeda, the former Carp player, said, you know, the thing that he noticed when Tonosaki was on the national team playing for Samurai Japan, that not only was he available to play as an infielder or an outfielder, but he could have been a defensive replacement. He could have been a starter. He could have been a pinch hitter. He could have come in to steal a base. I mean, he just does so many things. And he gave manager Atsunori Inaba so many options, just like a wild card. And he said, that is a great aspect of your game, that you can do anything. Tonosaki said, yeah, that's what he prides himself as, you know, as a, not just a utility guy, but a starter who can do a lot of things. And I think that's, he might be able to have a chance to shine with the Lions this year. He's certainly gaining more respect and getting more interview and screen time, so that's fun. But also, the Lions have the mascot, Daisuke Matsuzaka, who seems like to me...
Oh, I thought you were talking about Leo. Okay.
Daisuke seems to be like half coach, half pitcher. I saw him talking about the fact that when he was working out with some of the younger pitchers at first, he just kind of stood back and watched them. I did read an article, our paper, the Yomiuri, published an article in Japanese, I think today, it was in today's paper, just a question and answer with him, and his late career situation with him, and him talking about everything's going to be a struggle. I don't think I can compete with the young players in terms of the velocity and the way they throw, but I know how to compete.
So I need to have trouble competing in velocity with you.
Yes, I think you're right.
I don't think that. I don't know if you could throw 80 miles an hour.
Okay. and then Adam Jones with Oryx. Obviously, he's a big name player coming over from the major leagues, and they meaning the media, really focused on him and what he's doing in batting practice, how he's taking batting practice, what he's eating. I've seen all kinds of stuff on YouTube and on TV about it. But yeah, he's getting a lot of camera time, and we would expect so, and we would expect him to get a lot of home run trot time as well, or just big hit time for that team. I don't know what to do with the expectations as an observer, as a media member, but for me personally, I would like to see him do well, just because I've liked his game for a long time. And
oh man, what a! And I've never met him. I've never met him. I've never spoken to him. But I have had very few instances where I've read anything about him that I couldn't think what a good, what a right way to say something, or what a right thing to speak up about. I mean, 100%. He's one of these guys who you just think, this guy knows, he knows when to talk and what to say.
Yeah, I'm hoping he does well.
So he's one of the people I most look forward to talking to this year.
Yes, definitely. And then finally, for me,
one of the other highlights that really impressed me, and I don't know how much of a hitter he is, but Alcides Escobar, who's a slick fielding shortstop with the Yakult Swallows this year, and he has been looking good in the highlights with that team, and they seem to be very excited about him in terms of...
Yeah, he's a fun one, too, because he played in Japan with the Major League All-Stars 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's, hopefully, I mean, I don't think shortstop was a problem area per se for the Swallows. I think they had so many problems.
Oh, come on.
No, I just mean that they had so many problems, I don't think you could say, well, this wasn't good.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's right. That's like saying, here's a colander, fill the hole.
Yeah, here's a colander. But it has too many holes in it.
Exactly. 75 of them. Which one is the hole?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
okay, saying the Swallows had 75 holes is probably generous to the Swallows.
But yes. So those are some of the highlights. And I mean, there's no way we have time to go through every team and every player who has gotten a little bit of screen time. But those are some of the highlights that I have noticed. Okay. So that's what I wanted to do.
A couple of things I thought. I love the camp, as I guess the blog, the jballisland.com readers know. I love the camp headlines. The first day's got to be the dumbest one of the year. I swear, they've got to be the stupidest day of the year in baseball headlines. And my favorite of them all is Manager Yoda says the Dragons are aiming to win the championship.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. And I, having said that, I feel bad for the person who had to edit that story. I feel bad for the person who had to write that story. But I can almost, I can pretty much guess how that happened. Sometimes as a reporter, things, you can have five. The most proactive reporter can have five plans for a day, and every one of them can go south.
Right.
Until the only thing left is the mandatory two sound bites from the manager. You know, this guy, they switched the bullpen times. The pitching coach you were going to talk to wasn't there because you had to. Okay, here's the thing. The reporters at camp have to do a lot of things. They have to count. Every key batter, they have to count how many pitches they face in BP and how many balls go over the fence.
Yep.
I'm not kidding.
No.
Every big pitcher, they have to count how many pitches they threw in the bullpen and whether the catcher was sitting or standing.
Yep.
And so on top of that, they can have all these plans for stories, but who cares? You know, you got to know how many balls the guy hit off the bat. Hit over the park off the machine.
You got to do the basics.
Yeah, you got to do the important stuff. So that leaves us with Manager Yoda is aiming for a championship. Well, that kind of bit, that kind of news, just hold the presses.
That ain't news.
So a little rundown from today's news. Matsuzaka has now thrown his second bullpen, and this is the kid who the Boston Red Sox had to put a muzzle, you know, had to shackle him to the bench to keep him from throwing 100-pitch bullpens.
Uh-huh.
In his two bullpens, he has now thrown a total of 47 pitches. I think today's bullpen was 17.
I thought you were going to say 10.
No.
Because a fan reached out and touched his damaged shoulder.
Not, yeah, the overeager high five. Okay, today's news. A lot from the SoftBank Hawks camp.
Mm-hmm.
Ballantyne hits 20 over the fence. Kenji Jojima, who's now a front office advisor for the Hawks, speaks English to Rick Vandenhoek.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's a headline. All right. What did you say? Hi?
I know. Yuki Inagita hits 14 over the fence. Now Higashihama sets the team's spring record in bullpen high pitches, 149. So we've got Matsuzaka throwing 47-2, and now Higashihama throwing 149. So that's a little bit of what's going on in camp. And I guess the other thing...
You poor guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking, I just go through these and I just
luckily,
wince. But this was...
Yeah, you and I, luckily, we don't have to sit around and come up with a story for each day at camp. Because
I know.
Sometimes there is no news, and that is
there
proof.
Is no news. Right.
You just so, read that as I, it's
probably,
proof.
Probably. And the two things that I've been watching, actually, are two of the guys I've been looking at from the Under-18 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
One is Takaya Ishikawa.
Ishikawa, the Dragons rookie.
The Dragons kid. I love this kid.
Huh.
I think he's going to mash.
Huh.
He's just got a delightful swing. He's not going to make anybody think he's. Although they had him working out at shortstop today, I think that's probably a stretch. His feet look a little heavy, but he knows what he's doing. He's pretty fast. But he's just got a lovely power swing, and he's got a big strong frame.
Mm-hmm.
But being Japanese, it's all in the legs.
Okay.
It's like they've told him don't do any upper body work because it'll make you look like a foreigner or something. I don't know. But he seems to be doing fine. And the other guy who I'm just nuts about, and I'm really already exasperated, is Junya Nishi, who is the Hanshin Tigers' first round draft choice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was their alternate pick when they failed to get the first guy they wanted. And Junya Nishi is a kid who can really mash the ball.
Huh.
He can really drive it.
Okay.
But here's the problem. He's a pitcher.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Mm.
He's a pitcher. And he throws... He sits about 90 miles an hour. He's an 18-year-old pitcher. And he throws a pretty good change and a pretty good slider and a pretty good splitter. His curveball... Okay, we'll talk about the curveball maybe as a work in project, but he's a little awkward on the mound. His body's a little funky in that his torso is very large for his body.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly, a little bit. He's got a little bit of the Ron Say thing going on.
Okay,
but as a hitter, I just love this guy as a hitter because of his torso. It always looks like his upper body is out of sync with his lower body. But I think this is something he's going to grow into. But this kid can really drive the ball. But here's the problem. He's a pitcher.
Yeah, you said that.
So you know what that means. And he's playing for the Hanshin Tigers. So, and although the manager said, I'd like to think of you as a two-way player. But then in the next breath he said, oh, but we can't really have two-way players in the Central League. So let's work on your pitching.
Yeah, get your butt out there on the mound.
So we're going to have a guy who I think who looks like, you know, who has a chance to develop into a guy who's going to hit 25, 30 home runs a year. And let's just forget about that hitting.
Well, you know, Yoshio Itoi, who's there, started out as a pitcher, right? And
Well, he didn't have this kid's control. He threw pretty hard.
Mm.
And he also was coming out of college, and he didn't get turned into a hitter until he was about 26.
Mm. All right. Well, yeah, thank you for your camp notes. And, yeah,
so okay, thank you.
I heard you say something that your feet heavy and for infield. I'm liking the classes that you're taking, so you're going to be talking like me more than ever next year or this year. All right, we've got one little...
Get out of town.
One note that I wanted to touch on, and we basically taped our previous show. We taped on the same night, sort of night/morning, that former Dragons player and skipper Morimichi Takagi passed away. That was January 17th. So we taped that episode just as that news broke. And he died, like I said, he was 78. He died of heart failure. He was the Dragons' second baseman. He was known as Mr. Dragons. He was the first Mr. Dragons. And mm-hmm. he played for the better part of 21 years and had two stints as the
yep.
club's manager. And he finished as manager, finished second without. He finished second three times without any pennants as a player. He was a best nine player seven times. He had three gold gloves. And he still leads second baseman all time in several defensive categories. So I did hear, I think it was Kazuyoshi Tatsunami was interviewed and said, you know, he was a good manager, a great player, highly respected, and really regret not being able to at least win one championship, one pennant for him. Because we came so close. So that was kind of a surprise. You know, I knew the news had gone down by the morning after we taped, but the weekends are very hectic, and I didn't want to put just a little note on to the last show mm-hmm. just with myself, so we decided to push it over until this to this show. But again, here we are in a show where we have two interviews and we got to move along, but much respect to Takagi, and hopefully the Dragons yeah. can do something for him this season, maybe wear a patch or dedicate something.
Yeah, no, he was I'll just very briefly, you know, the thing about Takagi, well, he was a defensive whiz, as you mentioned. He was famous for a couple of things, learning a backhanded flip mm-hmm. to the shortstop right. that he picked up from a former major leaguer and became sort of his trademark. My friend Kenichi Yazawa said basically you couldn't talk to him on the bench. You couldn't talk to him on the bench because he spent all his time on the bench focusing on the pitcher, trying to see how they were tipping their pitches.
Mm.
That was his thing. He loved to steal signs and figure out how pitchers tip their pitches. He was obsessed with it, which was really fun.
Mm.
The other thing is that he was really ornery. He really had a terrible temper, although he didn't talk a lot. And I think Tatsunami said that, you know, Hoshino would shout and punch his fist in the air and sometimes punch his fist into players' ribs.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And but nobody indeed, he made contact a few times. But nobody was as scary as Takagi when he shouted.
Yeah, I heard Tatsunami say, yeah, he didn't even have to shout some of the times, he'd just give you a look.
Yeah, he had that look, and I never became acquainted with him. He's my brother-in-law's was my brother-in-law's favorite player when he was young, and the one thing I remember is that when Takagi came back to manage a few years ago, when Hiromitsu Ochiai was dumped, he brought along my buddy Hiroshi Gondo mm-hmm. to be his pitching coach.
Right.
He's 72 or something. And anyway, they got into a disagreement about the managing of the pitching staff, and they had a pushing and shoving match in the dugout.
Mm.
So it's like, and I think the headline was, I don't know what, like Grandpa Slugfest or something the next day in the Nikon Sports. It had them looking at, you know, looking at each other and, you know, it looks could kill.
Yep. Well, yeah, hopefully they do something and to honor him, and I'm sure they will, the Dragons will this season. We got to move along. Let's go to fielding questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the first one comes from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo. He says, Happy New Year, chaps. Glad to hear your last podcast, as it reminded me that baseball is nearly back. Scanning the usual off-season non-news pieces in Yahoo Sports Today, I came across one about Louis Okoye of the Rakuten Eagles. He said, what would you say are his chances of getting a run on the first team this season? I get the feeling his bus pass to the farm team is becoming more and more long-term each season. Any other ex-prospects or high draft picks that are under pressure to get it together this season? Thanks as always, Glenn. So I'll start it off. You know, with Okoye, I was saying that maybe he probably should be traded, because I think by the offer that the Rakuten Eagles made to the free agent Shuhei Fukuda in the offseason, we saw some ridiculous numbers and years. I think that tells you exactly what the Eagles are expecting and what they think about Okoye.
I have a question. How do you like this trade? Shintaro Fujinami for Louis Okoye?
Unless they're planning to take Fujinami and make him the closer, I don't really see how they can use him, because he hasn't been effective in the Central League, and he hasn't been effective with his control. So
I think the thing he needs to gain control is to get away from the Tigers.
That might be it.
I said that about a lot of people.
It could be environment. But as for Okoye, I don't know. I like, if they're trying to get some guy, some outfielder who's probably either peaked or has 1 year of peak performance, and pay him a bunch of money, then that tells you that they don't think very much about Okoye. So I would say bus pass. I would say he's locked into playing on the farm unless he can start hitting. Now, I did read an article in which he said he's learning a lot more. Remember, this is a guy who started playing baseball late. He was playing soccer and other sports and got into playing baseball when he was in high school. So he's still learning. Mm-hmm. He still has a lot to learn. I think the thing that the article I read said, you know, most of what he has done is just because he had physical ability. It wasn't because he was a good baseball player. And he's been relying on that. And now that he's starting to learn on lean on his ability to study the game and learn more about the game, that's going to help carry his career. But he's still young. He's just 21, maybe 22. So
He's got some time. Yeah, the quick one about that is Tuffy Rhodes told me the same thing, essentially that baseball wasn't really his sport.
Right.
He played it, but basically he got to the major leagues because he had raw physical talent, because he was good at hitting baseballs, but he wasn't good at, he couldn't make any adjustments. He didn't study the game. And so after he took a tumble, then he changed his approach. Mm-hmm. And so from about the age of 24, he began learning how to play baseball. So there's always that possibility.
Yeah. Some other guys, I think Chihaya Sasaki of the Lotte Marines, it's going to be his third season. I think they're expecting that. I mean, they drafted him and they were thrilled. They thought he was going to be an ace-level pitcher, and he just really hasn't done that for them. I think they expect a little bit more on the returns there. I think Kaito Kozono of the Carp, who snatched the job, the shortstop job from Kosuke Tanaka, the underperforming Kosuke Tanaka last year, I think if he's going to be the starter, he's going to have to produce. I think he got the job because he was so good defensively, and then he started to hit. But now if he plays good defense and doesn't hit, I think he's right back on the bench.
I don't think so. I think first of all, it's too early to say what he's going to do based on his results.
Sure.
Because it's such a small sample size. I think I would look at somebody who's actually who's probably not done enough for a prolonged period of time, or teams appear to already have given up on them. And my candidates for the top two on that list are Shun Takayama
of the Tigers
and Taiga Hirasawa
of the Marines. Yeah.
Who basically was going to be, he was going to be the bee's knees 3 years ago, and basically we're still looking for the insects.
Yeah,
He did get some playing time last year, but it was not a sterling success. And then, of course, guys who's like have been really highly touted, but have not done anything. I think we have to put Kotaro Kiyomiya in that category. I mean, he's done a little bit. He's got real power. He can really hit the ball far.
Yeah, I agree.
But he doesn't have any game power. He can't hit home runs in competition.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't say can't.
So he's got to sort of figure out his game as well. So those, I don't know about Kozono yet, because I don't think he's actually proved that he's had any problems.
Oh sure,
I think you have to get to that point, like Okoye, you have to get to the point where they actually give up on you, or they've showed that they would prefer to use somebody. I mean, Okoye, I mean, he came up and they decided, well, there are other people we would prefer to give your job to.
Right. Yeah. It's not even your job.
I know. Well, that's with Rockton. I mean, how many outfield spots do they have that don't belong to Jabari Blash?
Yeah. It's a mess. My thing about Kozono, not that he hasn't been able to do anything. I think he got the job because he was able to play. At least he was, I mean, Tanaka was struggling with the defense and then he wasn't hitting. And I think they put the rookie out there, Kozono, last year, and he played defense and then he started to hit a little bit. So I think they want him to hit. But again, Tanaka, I believe, is the team captain, or he's the team rep, the union rep, one or the other. So he's an important face in that dugout and in that locker room. So I don't think he's going anywhere. So if the kid struggles, I don't.
Yeah, and he'd been hurt. He was coming off an injury the year before. He told me, and it was like his spring training last year. His off season was lousy, and
yeah.
Okay. Everything went south from the start, and then he was pushing and hurt himself again, and it was just a disaster of a season. Yeah. But he's also pushing it. His age is, he's not young, and
yeah, he came out
so
of
obviously Kozono's yeah. the guy they want. Obviously Akira Neo with the Tigers, Akira Neo with the Dragons would like to get his career started at some point.
And did you know they're gonna? He said I was watching a news show that said he's going to be a two-way player, and then it turns out that the two ways are infielder, outfielder. So they're going to... I thought he was going to pitch,
well,
too.
They were talking about... Well, that was Yoda's opportunity to do the Yano comment, which is, we think you could pitch, but... we're just joking.
Yeah, we're just joking.
Hashtag high heat.
we're not being serious about this. Right. We think you can pitch when nobody's listening.
Right. So yeah, Glenn, but, there are a number of players we could get into, but we'll just let it play out a little bit into the preseason, and then we'll go through some.
Then we'll string them up.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we got another email from Michael H. in New York City. He sent one by email, and he says, "Hope all is well with you, Jim and John, and your respective families." From what I can tell from browsing Google translated versions of Nikon Sports articles, I think that I have read that the Eagles are planning to move Yuki Matsui from the closer's role into the starting rotation for 2020. Can you verify that? That is correct, sir. If so,
that's right.
If so, how well do you think he will do as a starter? He clearly has enough stuff when he is laying it all out at once, but I'm a little worried about how he'll do if he needs to hold some back for the second or third times through the batting order, both in terms of velocity and in terms of holding back on an out pitch. Thanks again, Michael H. in New York. So, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember him as a starter was that he walked everybody, and then as soon as they made him a reliever, he stopped walking people. So that was pretty much that. I really don't remember enough of his pitching when they were trying to start him. I know that his slider is wonderful, and that he has a good fastball, and
a good curve.
Only two pitches. Okay, I never even think about that because I just see that wipeout slider and the fastball, and as typical Japanese pitcher who's good with a slider, he can throw it in lots of different places, which is huge, and he can throw it where he wants to. So if he's got a curve, then he's a three-pitch pitcher, and I would say with that slider and that fastball, yeah, and he's a lefty, so he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think this is a guy who was an incredible amateur starter, and then he was shipped to the bullpen early on in his career. He had 17 starts as a rookie, but he was shipped to the bullpen because he wasn't effective. So I think he knows how to go through lineups. I think he has good secondary stuff and all that. He just hasn't pitched deep into games in 6 years and not on this level. But I did see on Jay Sky Sports that I saw camp one day, camp vision or whatever they call it, and he's working on his windup and delivery because he has basically been pitching out of the stretch for much of his time as a closer. So he's working on a full windup and all that stuff. I don't envision him being a Sawamura Award candidate, but he certainly was a quality pitcher before, and all he needs to do is get things together so that he can pitch deep into games. Now, whether that's, you know, again, I'm sure he was used to going through lineups more than twice in a game, so I'm not worried about that. But Takuya Asao, the Dragon setup guy, and who won MVP in, when was it, 2011, 2010, one of those years, he had a short stint as a starter that fell flat when he was coming out of the bullpen because he just really didn't show enough effectiveness with his secondary stuff. I don't think Matsui has that problem, but he's just going to have to prove to himself and to other teams that he can go through lineups consistently and pitch deep into games and then do it again the following week when they play the same team because of the schedule. And if he can do that, I think, you know, I'm confident he can be a competent pitcher out there, a credible starter, but I'm not sure that he's going to be a better pitcher than he was as a closer. I just found that, I can't remember if it was Dave Ogubo, I don't remember who decided to put him in the bullpen, but I just thought that was a great move for his career,
and I'm not sure if I can get that image out of my mind and see him as a starter, or a successful starter. And so I have the same concerns you have, but it's not anything about his stuff. It's just I haven't seen him do it on this level yet consistently. So if he can prove he can do that, I think he'll be fine. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for the questions. Now, we are trying to plan something big for our prediction show, so stay tuned for that. The season opens up 9 days earlier on the calendar than it did last year because of the Olympic break. The teams are going to stop playing during the Olympics. So that's going to push our production schedule up ahead. So wish us luck on that. I'm heading to Okinawa for camp, and we'll be back by the time most of you hear this episode. So I'm not sure when our next show will be, probably in 2 weeks, but I hope to get a few chats while I'm down in Okinawa. Otherwise, enjoy your camp season.
And see you at the ballpark, even if it's spring training.